you Americans and your allies. Armed Forces Radio brings you a special rebroadcast with Victor Young and the orchestra, Ken Darby and the chorus, and America's beloved baritone, John Charles Thomas.
Hello, dear friends, this is John Charles Thomas. Again, it is my deep satisfaction, as it is for Vic Young, Ken Darby, and the rest of our cast, to be able to sing and play for you men and women of the United Nations Armed Forces on these weekly broadcasts of ours. And now, Vic, with the preliminaries over, let's get started. On our Christmas story. Victor has provided some special music. Ken has done the chorals, and I'll not only have some great old Christmas songs to sing during the story, but I'll be speaking some of the lines as well. Now we present the juggler of Our Lady. And as John Nesbitt is ready at his microphone, I'll set the stage with a song.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of the dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared, and the soul felt its worth. The thrill of hope to the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees, oh, hear the angel voices, oh, night divine, oh, night when Christ was born.
In the days when the world was young, there lived in France a little man of no importance. Everyone said that he didn't amount to anything, and he firmly believed this himself, for he was just a poor traveling circus entertainer, a juggler. He couldn't read or write, and all that he really knew how to do was to go about from town to town following the little country fairs, doing his tricks for the children and earning a few pennies a day. His first name was Barnaby, but of course he was too unimportant to have any last name at all. Now, when it was summertime, and the weather was sunny and beautiful, and the people were strolling around the streets, and the young lovers were holding tightly to each other's hands in the park, then Barnaby would be very happy, because he would find a clear place in the village square, and he would spread out a strip of old carpet on the cobblestones. And on the carpet, he would perform his tricks for the children and the grown-ups alike. Now, Barnaby, although he knew he was a man of no importance, was a wonderful juggler. You wouldn't believe half the things he could do. At first, he would only balance a tin pie plate on the tip of his nose. But when the crowd had collected, then he would stand on his head and juggle 6 golden-colored balls in the air at the same time, catching them with his feet. And sometimes he could actually stand on his head and juggle 12 sharp knives instead of the golden balls, and catch the knives with his feet, too. And then the people would applaud, and the children would jump up and down with delight, and a whole rain of pennies would be thrown down onto Barnaby's carpet.
Wonderful!
And at the end of a day's work like this, Barnaby would collect the pennies in his hat, and before wearily resting his aching muscles, he would kneel down reverently and thank God for the hat full of pennies. And always the people would laugh at his simplicity, and everyone would say that Barnaby would never amount to anything. But all this is about the happy days in Barnaby's life. The summer days when the sun was shining and people were willing to toss a penny to a poor juggler. But when winter came, then Barnaby could afford no place to sleep, and he had to wrap up his juggling equipment in the old carpet and trudge along the muddy roads, begging a chance to sleep a night in a farmer's barn or entertaining the servants of some rich nobleman in order to earn a meal. And Barnaby, of course, being so simple, never thought of complaining, for he knew that the winter and the rains were as necessary as the spring and the summer. And as he trudged along, he would say to himself, "How could such an ignorant fellow as I ever hope for anything better?" Now, one year in France, there was a terrible winter. It was the coldest, wettest winter in 100 years. It began raining in October, and there was hardly any blue sky to be seen to the end of autumn. And you can imagine what all this did to the little vaudeville entertainer whom this story is about. On an evening in early December, at the end of a dreary, wet day, poor Barnaby trudged along a winding country road, sad and bent, carrying under his arm the golden balls and the knives wrapped up in the old piece of carpet.
And then, as he slopped along in the mud, a faint sound came to Barnaby's ears that came over the rain and the wind. Somebody was coming up that road, and in spite of all the storm and blizzard, was singing as happily as if it were a day in June. And Barnaby stopped and he listened, with the rain running down to the tip of his short little nose. And then, through the mist, at last Barnaby saw a strange sight. Coming slowly around a bend in the road was a fat white mule, and on the mule's back, with his legs sticking almost straight out on each side, there was a fine, fat monk. And now and then the young monk would bang the mule's side with his heel, and then he'd go on singing into the storm with all his might. Barnaby waited, and then as the mule came alongside of him, he ran along in the mud, while the young monk sang on as cheerfully as a lark. All of a sudden, the monk stopped and looked down, and there, of course, was poor Barnaby hopping along near the mule's tail and staring up at him. And the monk smiled at him and called out,
"It's going to be a cold night, Brother Juggler."
And Barnaby said, with his teeth chattering, "Oh, yes, yes, indeed, sir, very cold indeed."
"Well, then, how would you like it if I had a suggestion to make?"
"Oh, I should like it fine, sir, thank you."
"All right, then. How would you like to spend the night where I live, at the monastery?"
"Oh, if I only could. If I only could earn my lodging. But would they let an ignorant fellow like myself enter such a holy place as a monastery?" And the monk laughed.
"Ignorant? Now just hop on behind me, Brother Juggler. And the three of us, you and the mule and I, will soon be as warm as three bugs in a rug."
"Oh, thank you very much, sir. But I am very ignorant."
"Are we not all ignorant compared to God?"
And that night, sure enough, Barnaby found himself seated at the table in the huge dining hall of the monastery. It was blazing with candles in silver candlesticks, and the table was covered with enormous roasts of fine, rare beef, and legs of mutton swimming in gravy, and whole roast pigs with red apples in their mouths, and chicken pies, and enormous cakes covered with crushed almonds, and all the fresh apple cider that you could drink. Although Barnaby, of course, sat down at the very foot of the table, together with the other servants and the beggars, he looked around with the candlelight shining in his eyes, and he thought he'd never seen such a wonderful sight this side of heaven. And then, to cap it all, his own friend, the monk, now in a fine, dry, white robe, and just as merry as ever, was standing up to sing for the assembled company.
"Good King Wenceslas, look down on the feast of Stephen, when the snow lay round about, even Christmas even. I think so the moon that night, oh, the cross was cruel, when a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel. Good King Wenceslas did go through the bitter weather, saved the poor man from the snow, back they came together. Therefore, Christian men, be sure, wealth and faith possessing, he who now would help the poor shall yourself be blessed."
And now, as the singer sat down again, something very unusual happened. For suddenly everyone was looking at Barnaby. for he had risen trembling, and he was running clear around the table to where the lordly abbot, who was head of the monastery, sat at the top. And there Barnaby sank to his knees. Father, grant my prayer. Please, let me stay in this wonderful place and work for you. I cannot hope to become holy like one of you. I'm too ignorant. But let me work in the stables and mop up the kitchen floors and worship in the chapel with you. And the fat, jolly monk who'd met Barnaby on the road turned kindly to the abbot.
This is a good man, simple and pure of heart.
And so the abbot nodded, and that night Barnaby was given a cell to sleep in. And he put his carpet with the juggling equipment under his cot, and before he fell asleep, he swore to himself that never again would he go back to his disgraceful old profession of juggling 6 golden balls and 12 sharp knives. And in the days that followed, everyone smiled to watch Barnaby work. He would scrub the flagstones of the kitchen floor until they were so clean you could eat off them. And he would polish the big copper kettles until they shone like gold. And when the chapel bells rang out for services, then he would always creep humbly in by the side door and kneel down in the dark corner. And all through those early days, his face shone with happiness from morning to night. Until 2 weeks before Christmas, and then a bewildered expression began to appear upon his simple face, and slowly his joy turned to misery and despair. For around him he saw every monk busy preparing a gift to place in the chapel on Christmas Day. There was Brother Maurice, who was a fine painter, and he was working from dawn to dark to complete a magnificent picture for Christmas. And then there was Brother Marbode. He was a sculptor, and he was finishing a beautiful statue of Christ as a child. And he spent all his hours in chiseling stone so that his beard and his eyebrows and his hair were always white with stone dust. And Brother Ambrose was writing a new hymn, and Brother Joseph was composing the music for it. And everywhere that Barnaby went were these educated men following their work, each one of them making a beautiful gift to dedicate to God on Christmas Day. And what about Barnaby? He could do nothing. He would go to his tiny cell and unwrap his old juggling equipment from the carpet, and then he would gaze at it sadly. I am but a rough man, unskilled in art. I can't read or write. All I know how to do is to perform a few tricks. Everybody has a gift to present except me. And so Barnaby sank deep into sadness and despair. At nights he could no longer sleep, but he tossed on his mattress and stared at the ceiling overhead. And yet Christmas morning came at last, and strangely enough, it was the first day in all that bitter winter that the sun broke out and shone brilliantly. Outside the monastery, the fields of snow glistened like white frosting on a birthday cake. And trudging through the snow came dozens of children and their parents from the village, because on Christmas, the monastery held open house, and there was plenty of food and gifts for everybody. Now in the chapel that day, the great stone halls were decked out in pine branches and red holly berries, and thousands of candles gleamed everywhere, and the building rang with music and songs. It took 25 of the monks alone just to roll Brother Marbode's big, heavy statue into the chapel, and then the choir sang the new song that had been written by Brother Ambrose, and every brother went forward to present his gift to God. And where was Barnaby all of this time? Well, he wasn't to be seen anywhere. He stayed in his cell, with his eyes gleaming with fever, sick and shivering with chill, tossing on his mattress of straw and gazing at the ceiling overhead, and muttering over and over again the same words. Forgive me. I have no gift to offer. I have nothing to give that's worthy. Forgive me. And then a strange and terrible thing happened that no brother in that great monastery would ever forget during all the days of his life. For that evening, after the visitors had gone home and the chapel was deserted and nearly all of the brothers were sleeping on their hard beds, the plump, jolly monk who'd brought Barnaby to the monastery went running down the halls with his face smiling no more, but now white as a ghost. And he pounded over the stone floors to the private room of the abbot, and he shoved open the door without knocking, and panting with excitement, he seized the abbot by the arm. "Father, a frightful thing is happening. The most terrible sacrilege ever to take place in our church. Come with me." Without speaking a word, the abbot joined him, and the two men ran down the corridors and burst through a door and came out on the choir balcony, which was at the rear of the chapel. And the monk pointed his trembling finger down at the altar. And the abbot looked, and he turned white in color. God forgive him, he has gone mad. For down below, squarely in front of the altar, was Barnaby. He had spread out his old strip of carpet, and kneeling reverently on one knee, he was actually juggling in the air the 6 golden balls. He was presenting his old act and giving it magnificently. The bright knives, the shining balls, and even the tin pie plate balanced on the tip of his nose. And on his face was a look of adoration and joy. "We must seize him and drag him away," cried the abbot. And the two men turned toward the door. But at that exact moment, a dazzling light suddenly filled the chapel. A brilliant beam that came directly from the altar, and both the monks sank to their knees. For as Barnaby had finished his juggling act and knelt exhausted on his carpet, they saw the statue of the Virgin Mary move. And she came down from her pedestal, and coming to where Barnaby knelt, she took the blue hem of her robe and touched it to his forehead, gently drying the perspiration that glistened there. And the light dimmed, and up in the choir balcony, the brother who had befriended Barnaby smiled again with deep happiness. And he turned and spoke softly to the abbot. God has accepted the only gift he had to make. And the abbot slowly nodded. Blessed are the simple in heart, for they too shall see God.
This is John Charles Thomas. I'm sure you all recognized the songs. The last one, Schubert's beautiful Ave Maria, we thought would make a suitable closing for the story of the juggler of Our Lady. This is John Charles Thomas saying, for all of us, Merry Christmas to you all.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.